Hello and welcome to Promise. I'm your host, Sean. Here, we explore the promise of new technologies from synthetic biology to superconductors, and how science fiction is turning into science fact. Every episode, we cover new ground and pose the question, what is the world that we want to build? If you dream of shaping the future, you've come to the right place. This week, Ben and I cover AI assistants, gene and chromosomal editing, 3D printing skin, real-world deepfakes, and much more. A side note, the two AI tools we covered are Devin and Open Interpreter. Devin's capabilities have since been debunked quite comprehensively, while Open Interpreter made it on stage at Coachella via Grimes' mechanical spider. We also mentioned Neuralink, and have to point out that since recording, researchers at UT Austin can now achieve the same effect without any form of surgery. All these links are available in the show notes. With that out of the way, please enjoy this week's discussion. Welcome back to the Promise Podcast. If you hadn't listened in to last week's episode, myself, Sean, and I'm now joined by co-host Ben. A quick introduction for Ben, a man of many talents, physicist, designer, virtual reality enthusiast. What else can I say? He is also a D&D master and amateur science communicator. So Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. We had a lot of fun last time, so I'm keen to see what articles of news we can bring to the table today.
Likewise. So last episode, for a quick recap, we touched on automotive technology as well as a few cutting-edge advancements in material science and how both of those could combine together. I highly recommend checking it out for the discussion that we had. For this week, I think I might throw over to you first, Ben, for any interesting things you spotted on the internet this past week.
Absolutely. I'm going to start off with something that everybody's talking a lot about recently in the last year and a half, which is something AI related. So in the last week and a half, Cognition Labs has released or introduced their new AI software engineer, Devin. So Devin is their attempt at creating a mostly autonomous AI software engineer. They've got a range of abilities that Devin can take on, including learning how to build and deploy apps on their own, can learn how to use unfamiliar programs, so you can let Devin loose with a piece of software and they can allegedly figure it out on their own. They can also tune themselves for making sure that they're moving in the right direction and that Devin is creating the right outputs for what is necessary. They can also do bug and feature requests. They can contribute to work that humans are doing as well. And they've even given Devin work through Upwork and had them do some work for individuals who have requested assistance. So I think it's really interesting to see where this idea of the actual workplace implementation, not necessarily for the replacement of jobs, but the ability to have an assistant or something that can work alongside human software engineers to assist and streamline and make things easier and faster, to make sure that we're building things efficiently and with less effort required from the engineers involved. To move away from AI, there's some interesting news in biotech, the first of which is actually regarding chromosomes. Traditionally, gene therapy involves inserting genetic material that's needed into somebody's biology. We can do that on a small scale, we can do that in a local region. But scientists have overcome a large hurdle in the last few weeks regarding creating artificial chromosomes. So rather than having a specific bit of genetic material that might be mutated or lost or have issues when being added to the local genetics, we can actually introduce a whole new artificial chromosome, which is filled with maybe the whatever material and genes are lacking in an individual, and then they can proliferate out rather than trying to ham fist in and deal with the consequences of mismatched genetics. There's a lot more information in there, but it's a very interesting step to rectifying genetic diseases that previously were untouchable with the current technology.
I definitely have ethical questions around that.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, go ahead.
The next one is regarding proteins. It goes very deep into the actual science of how things work inside the human body. But essentially, if you've been following biotech for the last 10 years, you would have heard about CRISPR. This is a small side-related discovery that complements that sort of work. So we're now able to understand the processes of building proteins within the body a little better, which means that we can do better genetic therapy and improved medical outcomes for people who have diseases related to these proteins. So it's just a huge leap forward where we just didn't have the technology available in order to understand how these work. And with advancements in AI and computer processing and ingenuity from the scientists who are involved, we've been able to take another leap forward and understand just how complex these are and how we can start altering them and improving them and fixing them. And the last is a mix of both biological improvements as well as tech, something that I'm sure everybody's heard a lot about, which is Neuralink. So it was a really interesting showcase for the first Neuralink patient being able to control a mouse and keyboard with his mind, and apparently can use it up to 8 hours without needing to stop using this Neuralink device. So I think it's really interesting to see how it's actually being used now that one's been installed, and very keen to see where they go in the future with that.
Yeah, fascinating. I think just by pure coincidence, we stumbled upon fairly similar topics. I also have a synthetic biology bent to the things that I've been reading. I'll mirror the format that you went with, and I'll go with the AI-powered thing first. You may or may not have seen the release of Open Interpreter. It's a project that got launched probably like September or so last year, and the goal was to effectively be Siri, Google Home, Alexa, Cortana, all in one for all devices and purely open source. And they just launched this past week. Fantastic video on Twitter/X about how it functions. It can learn on the go. So for example, if you instruct it to, hey, send Ben a Slack message and instruct it how to do it for the first time, it remembers it, checks to see if that was done correctly. And you can ask it to complete tasks remotely. If you are outside of home and you need some things done inside of your home, it can basically run your own computer for you without you being there at your instruction. So it's interesting that it's been able to basically do what all of these large tech companies have been trying to do for years in less than 6 months, and to be able to do it cross-platform rather than forcing people into a specific ecosystem of technology. So that's number one. Number two and three are both in synthetic biology. The first I'll go with is some 3D printed skin that is the output of the University of Oregon teaming up with the French makeup company L'Oreal. They've developed a multi-layered lattice on which they can grow multiple layers of skin. So if anybody looks at a biology diagram of skin, there are actually many different kinds of skin cells at different layers from the surface. So historically, there has been, actually, I think it's an Australian breakthrough where someone could spray on skin to heal burns that they might have suffered. That basically covers the outermost layer, but doesn't mimic the actual structure of skin. So this lattice network can therefore grow the varying layers. It does take some time. I think they're looking at like over a month to properly grow the multiple layers, but early days. And the last thing that I found is some wearable tech. So there's a small 1-inch by 1-inch size patch that's been developed by researchers and engineers at UCLA that you can stick on your throat. And if you're missing vocal cords, for example, this patch can detect what you're trying to say and generate sound. So it can help people who have dysfunctional vocal cords to effectively regain their voice. How it works is a little bit beyond me in terms of the electromagnetic waves that it's trying to detect and the muscle contractions that it's trying to detect and how that translates into sound. I'm not 100% sure how it works, but perhaps if you read the article that I'll stick in the show notes, you might have a little bit of a better idea than I would. Interesting that we've stumbled across synthetic biology together and AI projects together. I can see how this might pan out in the future with this variety and synergy of things, but maybe I'll give the stage to you, Ben, to get the discussion rolling on what the future might look like.
Absolutely. I think my first thought when you were going through your stories for the week, that open interpreter one with the ability to go cross-platform understanding, I'm just very excited that it means that I no longer have to yell at my Google Home every 3 or 4 times for it to understand what I need it to do, just to turn something up or turn something down or turn something off. Very excited that I can have a real assistant that's not just do a task, and it never does that task properly anyway. I'm very interested with the idea of 3D printing skin, and that the mixture of understanding where our technology starts to assist in medical needs. I think you've gone more macro applications of it, and I've found some fundamental breakthroughs that will lead into tech similar to what you found. Both of those, however, with the vocal cord and the skin, I think are so interesting to see how we're solving biological problems with technology, but we're leaning on the processes that we already have in order to fix them. We're not saying, oh, you don't have vocal cords or you've got limited use, let's replace them with technology, which is what we've done in the past with vocal boxes and using inherently artificial means to fix a problem. We're going, you don't have vocal cords, that's fine. We can interpret what you're attempting to do rather than having to do something invasive. And the same with that skin, using your own skin or generic, whatever sort of cell technology we use, we're fixing a problem rather than trying to patch it up with something entirely artificial. And I think that's really interesting to see, that we're trusting the biological processes more and enhancing them rather than trying to replace or repair with only artificial means.
Yeah. One thing that comes to mind if we're looking at the 3D printed skin example is, what else could you do with the output of this lattice framework that you're growing cells in? So let's take skin and L'Oreal in mind. If, let's say they're able to grow, for lack of a better visual, a sheet of skin, and it's multi-layered in terms of its cellular structure, would that mean that they no longer have to conduct animal testing because they have a human-esque replica of skin and skin cells and reactions to inputs that they can experiment with their personal skincare products on? And if so, what does that mean for the future of animal testing and animal labs and the billions of mice that we go through every year to experiment our products on?
I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, but there is a statue of a mouse in a lab coat.
I believe I've seen it, but I can't remember where it is.
I can't remember where it is either. But it's essentially honoring the fact that we understand as a species, or the scientists who need mice for their experimentation, the sacrifice that they've given. And we acknowledge it on some level. However, I would be interested to know how much of a replica of human skin it is, especially since if we're assuming this skin can be used for anybody, how human is it? Is it, you can't just take my skin and make a band-aid out of it and give it to somebody else. Is it really skin? Does it need to be unique? Rather than selling the skin itself, are they selling a process? I'd love to know, assuming L'Oreal's involved, assuming they're going to commercialize it, just how commercialized is it going to be? Or is this, like you say, a lot more R&D related? Do they just take a small culture of skin cells and use that for testing? Surely that's more ethical than using animals. I think there's a line in the sand that we haven't drawn yet in terms of science with grown cells. We're talking, as a side conversation related to this, there's lab-grown meat. Meat berry is something that's gone around, the meat grape. Understanding where do we draw the line on what's alive, what's ethical, how can we grow it, should we be growing it? and I think it's very interesting, is that skin human? Do we count that as human? Or are we okay to test on that?
I'll put aside the... I think what ultimately ends up becoming a regulatory discussion about whether or not it's human. But I'm going to pair your line of thinking with some of the articles that you found. So if we were to go, all right, how unique is this skin? With the chromosomal insertion, as well as the gene editing that you brought up, theoretically, that's possible if you mash them together. If you went, okay, we know this person has this DNA and has these chromosomes, and we can write the structure of these chromosomes, why could that not be coded into the stem cells of the skin and the precursor to the skin, I should say, and then get printed, and you can get, oh, here's your unique set of skin for you specifically, and we know you're not going to have any allergic reaction to it or something.
I think that's, from a testing perspective, I'd love to see how this could be used in dermatology, and not just not just for testing purposes, but for people with rashes or for skin conditions that are so unique and can't be treated with normal means or is too dangerous to treat. I'd love to see how personalized this sort of testing can go. Imagine walking into a dermatologist, giving them a small scraping of skin cells, and the next week you've got a patch of your skin that's been grown, and they've got it has the condition that you have, and they can do testing going, if we insert this bit of genetic material, it fixes it. This part, it doesn't. This part, it aggravates it. And being able to do that testing and have personalized medical plans based on the material that you've provided. I think, again, it comes to that. We might park the conversation about regulatory discussions, but I think it's definitely a unique opportunity to be able to cater one-to-one. We always talk about personalization and making the best experience for the user. And I think this is an example of where we can start to narrow the focus. And depending on how fast or slow the process is, eventually, I would love to see one-to-one work being done with this unique gene therapy almost, or unique testing being able to be done without any of the risks associated with medical procedures. Oh, we can do a test on this little patch of skin that we've grown. I think there's conversations that go even further than if we can do skin, what else we can do. We'll stay here maybe for just the skin for now. Yeah, just the testing alone that you could do, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah, maybe we'll save that for the utopia dystopia case. Before we move on to that, I was curious about your take on Open Interpreter and Devin and the discrepancy between open source and closed source AI products. Open Interpreter has very much been an open source product, and it has been since the start. And you can go onto their website and view all of the documents. And as a result, you can build your own if you like, rather than buy one off the shelf from them. And I'm curious what you think the benefits or otherwise of using open source models to build such tools versus closed source models would be.
I think there's a few things there. I think personally, I'm mostly security focused. I like to make sure I own whatever I use. I own the software that I use. I try and make sure that I'm not providing too much information to companies that could be used to identify me. I know that I could go a lot further with it, but I tend to draw the line in the sand. At some point, it comes down to convenience. How frustrating is it, and is it worth the time and effort to have something that I own and have something that's locked down? And I would say, in terms of Open Interpreter, I would love to be able to have something that I downloaded, I owned, it was not controlled by anybody else, and could be used locally or through my devices for my needs, rather than buying it off the shelf. I think I would love to do that. However, the more and more busy I get, the more I lean towards, oh, I'll just buy something that somebody's built already. And then it starts to come down to, how much do I trust this? And at that point, open source will always be more trustworthy for me something like this where I can see what they're doing and so can other companies. And the more transparent that company is and the more research I can do, then the more I begin to trust that product. Companies that have lockdown products, you don't know how they work, I'm less likely to start providing information to. I would say with Open Interpreter, I'm very excited to have something that works in the house and something that I can, haven't looked at it yet. Can you run it locally? Is it local run?
From what I can tell of it, yes. You can hop onto their GitHub and fork their code effectively, and you should be able to run it locally on your own devices, yeah.
Then that's perfect. I've had a Pi-hole in the past at home. I've had a server in the past. I'm happy to run a local device to manage that software. Giving me the power and control over that is wonderful. And if it's easy to use, even better. The fact that it is open source and they are being transparent about what they're doing and how they're doing it means that I will always prefer a product similar to that over something that's 100% locked down. And that I might lose ownership of any moment because they decide to change their terms and conditions for their digital products.
Yeah. You raise an interesting point about convenience and what people are willing to trade for convenience or otherwise, depending on who you are and whether or not you're sticking to your principles. But maybe that is a good point for us to shift into utopia case and dystopia case. Would you like to start or should I start?
I can start. We're starting with utopia.
Sure, we'll go with that. Unless you had some extremely dystopian examples you wanted to get off your chest first.
No, we can get into that. For me, a utopia involving what we've talked about already really focuses in on, I'll actually say, the vocal cord story that you talked about. So utilizing a mixture of AI, machine learning, and medicinal benefits is where I see all of this technology coming into harmony. So the ability to go through billions of combinations or thousands of variations and do that quickly and efficiently means that just the data processing alone from AI mixed with the unique needs and use cases of individuals from an accessibility or medicinal need, I think they come together really nicely where you've got that vocal cord patch interpreting what individuals are doing, understanding their own resonance within their vocal cords, whether they work or not, and being able to interpret that, I think, goes so well and hand in hand with just the pure data processing that we get from AI. And for me, a utopia is where that one-to-one data processing happens with all assistive technology. So rather than having a one-size-fits-all or a small, medium, and large, a very macro breakdown of assistance or of support for individual needs, we do have something that can be tailored to everybody who needs it. So you're not getting the, let's say with this vocal cord, Stephen Hawking's voice is one of the most famous assisted voices or manufactured voices of all time. That voice is not unique. That was manufactured. There were a handful at the time. Everybody's heard Siri's voice or Google Assistant's voice or Microsoft Sam back in the day. There's a handful of these voices. Imagine a future where somebody loses their vocal cords and we can not only interpret what they're saying, but take a little bit of data that we've even got now and rebuild their own voice, start playing their own voice through their device, or have the device on them all of the time and being able to replace that rather than relying on a generic assistance tool. So I think that for me, the utopia is where we can cater and tailor all of this tech one-to-one and have them have exactly what they need to fit their specific needs rather than genericizing solutions.
All right, so that was it for vocal cords. Was there anything else that you wanted to add for any of the others?
No, I've got a dystopia for the home computer, the Open Interpreter one. I see 2001 A Space Odyssey, where you've got everything at the beck and call and control of your smart devices, of whether or not there's an assistant controlling everything or a network that the assistant can control. the Internet of Things has proliferated every device in the home. And you are almost regulated by this assistant, notifying you when to walk. Can't turn on the TV until you've done the housework. And losing the control or being forced to relinquish control of devices and of your digital autonomy to an assistant for what is essentially referred to as like your own well-being. Imagine not being able to go onto social media or use your device for anything until you've finished cleaning the house or called your mum for the day or whatever it is. It's determined that you have to do A before you can do B. And we have readily relinquished that control. And maybe it's laughable, but I think we already allow digital devices to dictate how we operate in our lives. And I wonder just how far we'll let that go. The frog in the boiling pot. How far are we going to go before we realize that we've given up so much of our data and so much of our own control before we no longer have control over it anymore? I think we'll notice a bit sooner than that, but I definitely see that as our worst case scenario.
Yeah, totally. I've just started reading a book called The Coming Wave by Mustafa Suleiman. If you know who that is, he's the founder of Inflection AI, now very recently joining Microsoft. And basically it's a book-long warning of our lack of understanding of the implications of the tech that we have and what we can think about doing for ourselves in the future, given that we're probably already too late to have genuine safeguards around it. So I've only just started reading the first chapter. Perhaps in subsequent episodes, I might have a little bit more to share. But yeah, very interesting that you've gone down fairly similar paths to the premise of this book.
I think the writing has almost been on the wall since we first thought about any sort of autonomous technology. I think we've seen enough uprisings in human history to know that any undervalued individual whose labor we rely on, if exploited, may backfire. And I think it's interesting as we come into an era where I even referred to Devon as he before. And that's an automatic, I didn't mean to, I wasn't specifically thinking about it, but we've got these AI assistants and tools that function similar to a human and are passing the Turing test and are passing these tests where the line between it, he, she, they in a digital tool is blurring. And where do we draw that line? And I think we are far away from it. But the idea of a sentient digital assistant or digital technology, would we notice it happening? I'm not sure. And I think that's where we start to run into issues of safeguards where we haven't prepared for this and we're assuming it's a tool forever. What happens when it's no longer a tool? Are we ready to deal? And the misunderstanding and the assumption that the status quo won't change is, I think, one of the most dangerous assumptions we've got at the moment.
Yeah, there is a term that he uses in the book, pessimism aversion, and he uses it to describe how the effective guardians of technology currently tend to have an aversion to pessimism because it's in their interest to see tech progress, and that has a bunch of downstream effects. For example, like not being able to foresee risks like this, or at least not wanting to engage in a potential risk like this. But yeah, like I said, I'll have more to say once I actually finish reading the book.
That's an interesting term, and the idea of not being able to see the risks, because it all feels very science fiction and far in the future and unrealistic until it's not. And we've had a few of those moments in the last few decades where, oh, that's so far away. Oh, no, it's already here. And I think it's definitely the right time to have those conversations. We think it's 10 years away, maybe it's only 2. We think it's 30 years away, maybe it's only 10. I think it's definitely, maybe it is too late, like the author said. I hope not.
All right, did you have anything more to add about either the utopia or dystopia cases
here?
No,
I'm good.
Okay. Utopia case for me, I think if I purely look at the synthetic biology things that we've discussed today, the optimist in me looks at it and goes, we're entering a new age of human resilience. Yes, we have a whole bunch of environmental and economic factors that are counting against us, and a bunch of downstream social factors that are counting against us as well. But with chromosomal editing insertion, or being able to figure out the structure of an organ or multiple organs and being able to basically 3D print that or grow it, we could effectively just replace parts of ourselves that we were never able to do before. The 3D printed skin example, we know what goes into an arm. There's bones in the middle, various kinds of muscle alongside it, and then skin on the outside at a very basic level. Obviously, each of those has different structures and components to them and different varieties of each to eventually form what we would know as an arm. But what's to say that we couldn't grow them like a lizard could regrow its tail, hypothetically? That's one thing. As weird as that might sound, it could definitely be very beneficial for other people, and is a combination of the assistive technology that the vocal cords could have. For example, if I tied the patch that enables someone to speak with Open Interpreter is intended to be a voice interface for your home computer, someone who does not have functioning vocal cords would not be able to interact with Open Interpreter. So having the combination of both of those enables a wider set of interaction with the digital world that otherwise would have been locked out. I would say that's the utopia case. There's a lot of things that I could see as being dystopian about these. For starters, the vocal patch itself, it's currently at its very first iteration, is a 1 inch by 1 inch, or like slightly larger than that, patch that sits just above your larynx. With advancements in technology, conceivably that would come down in size, and you could potentially make it skin tone colored, and it would be invisible to all but the most discerning eyes in the not too distant future, potentially. So we have an issue currently with digital deepfakes. It's hard to mimic somebody in real life, but I would imagine that with this, you could potentially completely change your voice or to mimic somebody else's voice with ease in real life, rather than having to be behind a screen and behind a synthesizer. That's number one. 3D printed skin, I'd say the dystopian case for that would be, let's say we do pursue the path where someone can have unique skin or organs grown or printed for them. The amount of genetic data that whoever is doing the printing has to have as a result, I would imagine, is way worse than 23andMe gathering millions of swabs from everybody around the world and then getting a data breach. Yeah, I would be pretty apprehensive about sharing that a swab of my genetic material in the same way that you, Ben, would be pretty apprehensive about a piece of software that isn't entirely under your control. Is it arguably worse or more dangerous if it's your genetic material that is not under your control? What do you think?
If anything, is probably, I feel, the most invasive. The 23andMe collects essentially all of the genetic data they need to map you. It's almost the same amount as what you would get from actual skin cells, if not the same. How would you feel if testing was done on your skin and genetic data without your consent? You purchase a product A and it relies on giving a skin sample, and now they've got your skin sample and they start advertising for more things for you, and they do testing saying, hey, we've tested it on your skin already, it's going to work, it's done this much, it's done that much. And one-to-one personalization of medical is great, but with it does that come one-to-one personalization of advertisement and badgering for, hey, we've got your genetic material, we can test it as much as we want?
It's interesting you raise that, because I think I mentioned in a group chat a little while ago about how Google's business model is getting disrupted by all of these GPT AI interfaces, because someone can just plug a question in there and they'll get an actual response, as opposed to ads that mm-hmm. Google might surface in search results. Now, I wonder if something like this would be interesting to Google or Amazon, considering there's Amazon Health now, because they would be able to effectively target someone based on their genetic programming rather than their browsing habits.
Absolutely. It's just more data. They've got so much data on us already. It's another set of data that they can use to understand who we are and how to best surface advertisements to us, or to ensure that we see what they want us to see and engage with the content that they want us to engage with. It's the same when we use social media platforms. Algorithms have become so advanced that when you go onto platforms like TikTok, all of a sudden an hour and a half has gone by because they've surfaced what they need to keep you engaged. What can they do with your genetic material? Right now, not a lot. Who knows what they can do with it in the future? How well they can know you just from that?
You mentioned the algorithms. I'm conscious that as a content creator, as much as this is a hobby and passion project of mine, I am still, to a degree, a slave to the algorithms when I do post something out. I'm keenly aware of those. One thing that I didn't mention, which I think I would be remiss if I didn't, is around the chromosomal additions that you linked for mm-hmm. us this week. And that is in regards to Down syndrome. It was the first thing that came to mind mm-hmm. when you mentioned it. So for anybody who doesn't know, someone who has Down syndrome has an additional chromosome. Is that right?
There are multiple conditions where individuals can have the wrong amount of chromosomes. It's yeah. not always the same one. There can be multiple missing, I believe. It's essentially, there are a variety of conditions that crop up when an individual has an incorrect amount of chromosomes. And it just yes. means that they're missing or have extra genetic material that their body doesn't quite know what to do with or doesn't know what to do without.
Yeah, so I'm having a quick skim right now. It's also known as trisomy 21, a genetic disorder caused by the presence of all or part of a third copy of chromosome 21. Now, depending who you are, one might say that being able to edit, insert, or remove chromosomes is a good thing because that would lower the incidence of Down syndrome. But then the exact same argument could be taken on the other side for people who have family members or know people who have Down syndrome. And my experience with Down syndrome is, granted, is a limited sample size, but I have noticed that there's something amazing about people who have Down syndrome and their ability to wear their heart on their sleeve and just absolutely displaying the exact emotion that they're feeling at that point in time without any mask or filter. And I think it's something that we are sorely lacking from our society at the moment. We hide behind a lot of masks and the social media filters definitely don't help. So I think a dystopian case in that regard is to lose some beautiful aspects of our humanity and to genetically engineer out what some might perceive as flaws in our humanity, but it's really only one side of the story, I would say.
Absolutely. I think you're really talking about like Gattaca. Like how far do you take that genetic engineering and understanding? I think on the flip side of where you're talking about chromosomes in and of themselves, this tech also allows you to go a little further. And better or worse, it's not just the chromosomes themselves that you can package up and insert, but it's what goes in the chromosomes. So rather than being able to take an existing one, you can actually build a fresh, brand new, never seen before artificial chromosome and insert it into a human. And that's where we start to get things like the cure for genetic diseases. Let's say you've got a genetic disease that means that you're missing the ability to produce something in the body. We can wrap up a chromosome that's mostly padding, nothing, and we'll add inside of that the gene that lets you make that protein again. And we can package that up, insert it into an embryo, and you'll be born with 47 chromosomes instead of 46. But the additional chromosome won't do anything except for adding the gene that lets you make that protein that would otherwise mean you were very sick. I think we can go either direction with that. We can start genetic engineering to a degree where everybody knows exactly who they're going to be before they're born. Or in the utopian case, we can start to see the eradication very quickly of a lot of genetic diseases. It's without even worrying about the chromosomes themselves, the amount of lives that can be saved just by being able to do this new fundamental technique to create artificial chromosomes. I think there's so many avenues for healing that exist within there as well that I think nobody would argue with.
I think that is actually a really wonderful place to wrap up the show with some words of wisdom, as always, from you, Ben.
Thank you.
And a message of hope as we discuss dystopian aspects of the technology that we've looked at this week. I think we'll leave it there for now. Stay tuned next episode for even more discussions on emerging technology and what the world could look like for better or for worse. Any last words, Ben?
Just thank you for having me. I think, as always, great conversation and excited to see where all of this technology is going.
Awesome. Thank you once again, everybody, and thank you once again, Ben.
Thank you very much.